Today, broadcaster Andrew Neil is launching GB News this weekend to take on mainstream news channels, including the BBC's. But will it work?
I have had enough. I've had enough of being told what to think, enough of people being bullied and threatened and shut down. I've had enough of tiptoeing around the permanently offended brigade.
A majority of people feel that if they do want to have discussions about difficult issues, they risk losing their livelihood and their reputation. Progress is only achieved through social liberalism. It isn't achieved through telling people to shut up.
What's important to me?
What do all these people have in common? It's not just that they all love statues.
Should we tear down the Colosseum because slaves fought in it? Should we tear down Cleopatra? Right,
nor that they all rail against political correctness.
I think people are getting sick of this idea that they have to watch everything they say because there are these people who are trying to seek offence. And in that sense, I think
and it's not just that they detest what they call woke culture. The voices you've just heard are the presenters and reporters who will be fronting a new TV channel from Sunday called GB News. Some fear this is going to be Britain's answer to Fox News, feeding the so-called culture wars in search of an audience.
Your own scientists said that was a load of rubbish and you've had to go and delete the claim. So I just wonder if we can trust any facts that are coming from the Extinction Rebellion.
But its creators insist they're offering something genuinely different to the existing broadcast media.
What makes GB News so different is the fact that it opens up the floor to people around the country that reflect them and their communities, getting access to vital information, but also with a little bit of humour and mischief and entertainment.
A difference, they say, is not political, but about their willingness to discuss the subjects people really care about.
The fact that we've got reporters who live in every area of the country telling us their stories about what life is like in those areas.
From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, can GB News succeed in its attempt to change the face of British broadcasting? Jim Waterson, media editor at The Guardian. We've just heard from a few of the people that we're going to be able to see on GB News. But the biggest name and the driving force of the project is, of course, Andrew Neil. Tell us about Andrew Neil and how he came to decide on this career change.
With Andrew Neil, obviously, who's the chairman of The Spectator, has been a BBC interviewer for decades, and before that was the editor of The Sunday Times. He was always seen as sort of the BBC's token right-winger in some ways. He was the one who was obviously a conservative on air, but was also their main political interviewer, and ended up in an odd position with the BBC where he felt that he was disrespected in some way.
After 16 years of great success with This Week, I suggested we should be moved to a better time. And the BBC just blank refused to even consider that.
He'd been presenting This Week and wanted a more mainstream interview show.
And they did make some offers which were quite derisory.
And last summer kind of flagged that he was available and up for interesting ideas.
I was left in limbo. This Week was gone. The Andrew Neil Show was canned for the foreseeable. And then they decided to can it entirely by then. And I thought that was unnecessary. But there were bigger forces at work. I'd had a good innings, it was maybe time to move on.
He ended up involved with this nascent GB News business while also seeing whether there was anything for him at the BBC.
And do we know whose idea it was originally?
GB News's genesis is in two British Americans who have been floating this idea around for a while now. And they were convinced that there was a, particularly during the Brexit debate, a sort of anti-British mentality in the British media, and that they felt that there was an opening for something that was more positive about Brexit, more positive about business and capitalism. And they were looking around for funding for this idea for quite some time. And Robbie Gibb, who was Theresa May's communications director, and a few others were involved at that point.
So he approached me and he came to see me along with the chief executive. So Robbie was the one that introduced me to the whole concept.
And it all came to a head really at the end of last summer when it looked like there was going to be two rival opinionated TV channels in the UK, one by Rupert Murdoch called News UK TV, and this sort of slightly left field idea called GB News, which was at that point seen as the one that was less likely to get off the ground.
Tell me about it. What is GB News? What is it trying to do?
GB News would say that they're filling a gap because Sky and the BBC are just too liberal focused and that they don't sufficiently represent many of the people in the rest of the UK who engage on, for want of a better term, culture war issues, who might complain about wokeism, whatever that means on any given day, and that there is a gap in the market for the sort of person who currently sits there complaining to the BBC about the bias they see in one of their news broadcasts because it wasn't sufficiently respectful to the Queen or something like that.
I've got to have Woke Watch. I think we'll have a lot of fun with things like chest feeding. What was that police thing about being offensive is an offence? I think a lot of that isn't properly covered.
The question is really whether there's an audience for their proposed idea of what a new TV channel would look like. There's this idea internally that they're sort of a mythical centrist that's not being served. Slightly more dismissively, someone in Downing Street described the channel as Gammon Britain News in reference to the potentially ruddy faces of some of the older men who would be watching the channel. Frankly, a lot of younger people just won't watch TV anymore. So that is in many ways the market that they've got.
I heard there was a presentation that said they were describing these viewers as rational, civic-minded centrists. Apparently, they came up with the acronym ROCKS, which doesn't quite work, but basically an audience that fit what you just described. Is there an audience like that out there?
Well, there's an audience for LBC who pioneered the idea of what GB News is going to be. So just to make it really clear, GB News is not going to have bulletins as you know them. It's not going to have big rolling news trucks going around the country competing with the BBC and Sky. Its thing is going to be that every hour there's going to be a different set of presenters and they're going to discuss the issues of the day. It's like a rolling talk radio station on your screen. The question is, how do you actually get people to tune into that? Because it's hard enough to get people to watch the BBC News Channel. It's hard enough to get people to watch Sky. To actually sort of build up a loyal core viewer base for this beyond the idea and the perception among a few people that there is a sort of gap for an anti-woke TV, that's the challenge, and that's what I'm not entirely convinced that they can prove. As soon as you focus on issues that affect day-to-day lives, you start asking people what they are, and more often than not, it's things like, when's my bin collection? And I guess the thing is, what are the issues that aren't being talked about that can sustain a channel for this amount of broadcasting?
Do we have any idea what they actually need to prove it? Like, how many viewers would be success?
I think if they started getting six-figure viewing figures on live television in this day and age for a startup that's buried right at the bottom of your program guide, it's going to be in the sort of high numbers on almost anything you look at on Freeview or Sky or Virgin Media.
And I guess the other question is, what money are they going to be able to put into it? Obviously, they're not going to be competing with Sky News, for example, in terms of covering breaking news and being there on the scene with their cameras. They're going to be doing this chat show format, which arguably will be cheaper, but it does still need money. So where is it coming from?
They've raised about 60 million. The big investor is Discovery, which is an established US network with a UK presence, who weirdly are going to end up owning CNN pretty soon. There's also Sir Paul Marshall, who is a former Lib Dem turned massive Brexit supporter, who in a sort of weird twist is also the father of the bassist from Mumford & Sons. And the other big backer is Legatum, a Dubai-based hedge fund. You've also got two former chairmen of the Conservative Party who now sit in the House of Lords. You've got this interesting alliance, and you see this a lot in terms of, for want of a better term, culture war issues, of very rich elite people who feel they have to stand up to what they see as the real elite, which is a cultural one. And one of the questions is, are they backing this because they think that this is a really good business case? Or are they backing this because they want to change the British media landscape a little bit?
Well, that is interesting because from what I've heard, and I'm sure you're hearing similar things, they are telling people within GB News, A, that they're a pretty lean startup, and B, that they have to make money, that they'll have to think about things like merchandising, maybe even at some point think about weird subscription models.
I had a chat with the chief executive at GB News, an Australian called Angelos Frangopoulos, the other day, and he was making the argument that we're not really a television channel. We spent all this money setting up a television channel, but our money is going to come from an as-yet unlaunched subscription product for our hardcore fans, and that'll allow them to discuss things with their favourite host, to be involved in the programmes. There is something in that you can get quite a lot of money if you just get £10 a month from that group. Fox News in the States makes its money by charging the equivalent of Sky or Virgin Media to carry the channel. And the ads are just a nice bit of money on top of that. And it's wildly profitable. In the UK, you don't have those sort of deals. You have to pay to get into people's homes and then sell the ads. So immediately they're at a disadvantage compared to the US channels.
Okay, so that is everyone behind GB News. Let's talk about what is happening right now. Can you take me behind the scenes into their studios and tell me how it's going, how chaotic it is? Are they going to be ready for Sunday? And is there any truth to the rumour that Andrew Neil, at least at one point, got stuck in his house in France?
Andrew Neil, as far as we know, is now back in the UK, but he's certainly a man who's spent most of lockdown in the south of France. So you've got a channel backed by a US media company and a Dubai hedge fund with the lead host who spends most of his time in the south of France representing the underrepresented people of Great Britain. So it's an interesting one, but he is back. There is a studio. It's in Paddington in West London. If you looked at the pictures of it a couple of weeks ago before launch, there was a lot of MDF being nailed pretty quickly to a wall in a bid to get it up and running.
Well, welcome on set to our rapidly developing studio.
Technical rehearsals are somewhat frantic.
We've got at least rudimentary rehearsals taking place
as they try to get on air for this Sunday launch.
To make all of this come to life on your screens.
There'll be something when you tune in, hopefully on Sunday night, to see what really this product that has been so discussed but so little is known about actually is. It's variously been a sort of Fox News thing that'll rip up the established media order as we know it, or it's been something that even the people involved in it have downplayed, going, we're a small startup that we put together during lockdown, and if we even make it to air, that'll be a triumph.
It definitely feels to me like the driving force is to rail against political correctness. Is that fair? Can you see that in the key presenters, for example? Who are they?
The headline names are Andrew Neil. You've got people like former Apprentice contestant Michelle Dubry.
I would like you to move more back towards the centre. Stop with all of these bizarre identity politics.
You've got Dan Wootton, who's come across from The Sun and Talk Radio.
Well, if you look at the analysis from every country that has gone to a full lockdown, there is no link to decreased mortality. All this does is buy Wales some time. But for what, Chris? What are you buying time for? I don't understand.
Well, you don't seem very bright then. It's fairly simple.
And you've also got a load of people from established broadcasters like ITV and Sky.
And, you know, when you're describing the type of presenter they've gone for, there's one very obvious person who you might expect to be in a seat on GB News, but we haven't heard about it yet. What is Piers Morgan doing? Have they approached him?
They've certainly had discussions. They probably need his audience more than GB News can give him something. The years Piers Morgan spent on Good Morning Britain on ITV, where everything he said was turned into a culture war news story. There was an endless thing where there was a vegan sausage roll, yet another rant about Meghan Markle, or just whatever had come across his brain that morning. It was something that occupied people's headspace. And in an economy where money tends to follow attention, any media channel needs to really scream and scream and scream until people are paying it attention. And there's no one better at screaming on British telly than Piers Morgan.
I think what you've just said about the Queen is disgusting. I think it's unbelievable.
You talk about
the behaviour.
And, you know, arguably, Piers Morgan is a perfect sign of how there is an audience for that type of presentation. And given everything you've told me about GB News, it feels like there's quite a lot of content right now for them. It almost feels like news is being made up to provide them with content, whether it's, you know, I noticed their new reporter, Tom Harwood, tweeting that it is insane that young cricketer Ollie Robinson was suspended for racist and sexist tweets that he did when he was aged 18 and 19.
I want to make it clear that I'm not racist and I'm not sexist.
I deeply regret my actions and I'm ashamed of making such remarks.
I can imagine that is likely to come up. I imagine Gareth Southgate and taking the knee. I imagine trans rights. What do you think they're going to be discussing?
Well, it's hard to second guess a channel that's not on air yet, but all of those topics are things that you'd imagine they'd cover. I just wonder how many times you can go over whether a statue should come down, and I'll be interested to see what else they're filling it with. The focus doesn't even seem to be getting enormous political guests.
We'll do a main interview if we can get one. We won't do an interview if it's only the Minister for Paperclips.
When I had a chat with some people there this week, they sort of were playing down the idea that you should expect to see massive names from the Cabinet on every week. It'd be interesting to see what someone like Andrew Neil does with it. How do you project this sort of sense of a culture war? Do you end up just going through Twitter looking for offence? I imagine there'll probably be quite a lot of that, but they might also just be finding it quite hard to fill the time.
What you've set out, Jim, which is a load of largely centre-right presenters. I know there are a couple who come to it from the left, and largely presenters who want to rail against political correctness gone mad, or as you say these days, woke culture, and who particularly want to focus on these rows rather than, for example, breaking news. All sounds a bit like Fox News. What do they say about that comparison?
Look, there are two people. When GB News launches, there are two people who are going to be deeply disappointed. One is a small number of people that want it to be Fox News, and the other of those who've said it's going to be Fox News.
Back last September, when we first started writing about opinionated news channels and the rumours that were circulating about them coming to the UK, it felt like the obvious comparison was Fox, because Fox is this thing that has influenced and swayed American politics to an incredible degree for decades now. I think now we look at it and we look at the mentality, the fact that Ofcom is there in the background makes a better comparison probably either LBC or particularly Talk Radio, the Rupert Murdoch equivalent of LBC. They are places that have gone flat out for guests who will rant about lockdown or equally decry those who rant about lockdown. They'll have borderline anti-vaxxers on air and then rip up the Guardian on air when they're disgusted with something we've written about them. It's very much a performance that's there to be clipped up for social and to whip up your audience.
I can't believe you're suggesting that they don't read The Guardian.
One of Talk Radio's favourite things was a guy who about three or four times a month would rip up a copy of The Guardian on air, and I was just grateful for the sale, really. I thought that was very nice of him to keep buying it.
I'm sorry, guys. I mean, it's getting more and more ridiculous now, isn't it? If you can't actually put together a decent story which is actually informative, which actually tells people what's going on, then what is the point of you? What is the point of The Guardian?
But how does this interact with Twitter? Will GB News end up being something that very few people watch live, but will have enormous reach when that particular moment goes viral? What happens if someone says something that's a bit over the line? Do they say that it's just a woke mob coming for our team? Or do they accept that Ofcom is going to investigate them and say, you overstepped the mark there? There's a lot of unknowns here. And this is something that listeners might not understand. People listening to this might think that the UK has a rule on impartiality in broadcasting. It does, but it's a concept called due impartiality. And what that means is less that you've got to hear 50% from one side of a debate and 50% from the other. What it means is that you've got to allow an alternative view to be put forward, but a lot is involved in the context of the broadcast. So if you tune in expecting an opinionated right winger, as long as you're exposed to different views, and that is what it's marketed as and what you're expecting, you can get away with a lot more than people realise.
You've talked about Ofcom and the fact that Ofcom means it perhaps needs to be something slightly different to Fox News. But, you know, the radio station LBC that you mentioned gets around these rules by including opinionated voices from both the left and the right. They try and balance out over a day. Now, as I understand it, inside GB News, they've been told that that isn't actually okay within Ofcom rules, and that what they need to do is balance within a programme. How are they going to be able to achieve that?
What you've got to do is tick the Ofcom box of saying, yeah, we just gave you a massive rant about why Britain's going to hell in a handcart because people tearing down statues on every street corner. But then you've got to have the alternate view at least represented so people are exposed to the idea of something else as an option. And it could be quite jarring because it's almost like a handbrake. If you think a lot of the potential audience for this show might have been used to watching YouTube things or listening to podcasts for years, which are completely unregulated, and if you're watching GB News, you might have the sensation that, well, you've just convinced me of this case, and so why are you having to say the exact opposite suddenly? But that is how a lot of the stations get around it. As long as there's a sort of indication that there are alternatives out there, then Ofcom will probably be happy. Of course, an interesting one is Ofcom likes to think it sits above politics, but there's currently a battle to get Paul Dacre in, the former editor of the Daily Mail, as chairman of the organisation. And even while the complaints teams at Ofcom are people who've been there for years and tend to do things like the book, any attempt to criticise GB News for breaching the rules because it didn't represent a particular viewpoint would be an incredibly loaded political decision and something that would, you could imagine in the current environment, get the attention of the government.
I mean, beyond the obvious culture war stuff, there is a suggestion that the other thing they want to do is be more regional. Can we expect more of that?
Well, they've hired a fair few people in the regions, quite how they use them, given the focus is very much going to be on having debate and discussion. It's not entirely clear how the reporters will feed into that from around the country. But, I mean, that is a genuine failing on the behalf of a lot of traditional media outlets in the UK, that they don't have enough people outside of London.
Obviously, one of the arguments here is that they don't think that the other broadcasters are doing what they think should be done. They think that they skew left or skew woke, if you like. I mean, in reality, if you watch the output of BBC News or ITV News, or in fact Sky News, lots of it is reporting from correspondents based all over the country. In fact, I doubt GB News will be able to come close in terms of headcount in different regions. But I guess the argument Andrew Neil would make is that the headquarters of these broadcasters in London are full of producers who have a more liberal and what he would call woke outlook. Is there any evidence for that?
The young people, and it does tend to skew young, who are the producers who make up the staff on these news channels at Sky and the BBC, might be more liberal than the national average. They probably live in London and they probably have certain values.
They share the same metropolitan values. They have broadly the same look on life. I mean, you know, look, this is not me saying it. Director generals of the BBC have said it.
The question is whether that's reflected in what goes on air. Maybe the reason that a lot of these stories that GB News might want to cover aren't being covered is because there is just a sense that they're not worthy of elevation to a national level. You can dive on obscure examples of almost anything and turn it into a topic of debate. The real thing that intrigues me is, do you see any change in how the BBC and Sky operate if this is a success? If it actually does start to get a few viewers away from the existing channels, do they have to look at their model and go, is this sort of rigid commitment to half of one side, half of the other on every debate something that can be sustained into the 2020s?
Coming up, can GB News find an audience? And what are the stakes for Andrew Neil? Jim, I want to ask you a slightly weird thing I heard from a source who says a senior figure linked to the BBC has argued that there is one problem that GB News might pose to the BBC. Not that it will take a big audience, but that it might take a particular type of audience, older men who might be fed up with the BBC and turn to GB News so they can hear presenters take on some of these politically correct issues. You can't see me, but just to be clear, I just put my hands up and I put politically correct in inverted commas there. But the argument was that if these men are watching GB News, then they'll no longer be complaining to the BBC, and that that would leave the BBC with a worry, which is that it could go even more in the liberal direction that GB News claims it's gone in.
In the same way that David Cameron's Conservative Party sort of benefited from having some of the more unusual characters go off and join UKIP.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a theory. I think the BBC is going through such a crisis. One of the strangest things for the BBC you can do is pick up a copy of its complaints log, which comes out every fortnight. And what you'll tend to find is about 10,000 people have written in to complain that the BBC's political coverage is insufficiently deferential to Boris Johnson. And then about 10,000 people have written in absolutely convinced that it's a Tory Lickspittle mouthpiece that isn't worth the licence fee at all. I don't think that's actually necessarily a good place for the BBC. There's sort of an old school mentality. Well, we're being attacked by both sides, so we must be doing something right. No, maybe you're being attacked by a lot of people who just don't feel that that form of broadcasting works for them anymore and would quite like something else.
I love the idea that these issues are not being covered. I mean, how much have we heard about Gareth Southgate and taking the knee? How much have we heard about Ollie Robinson? I mean, is there any evidence that free speech is actually being curtailed?
One of the strangest things with the whole cancel culture debate is that it seems that one of the easiest ways to get an audience nowadays is to complain that you're being cancelled and then immediately be rewarded with about 3 broadsheet columns, a regular slot on television, and the Today programme guest booker on speed dial to you. What is odd, though, is that if a lot of people feel that you can't say certain things, then they might be looking for a place where you can say certain things. There is always, no matter what the form of media, the potential for something that differentiates itself to find a gap in the market. And the big unanswered question with all of this is whether there is a gap in the market here. Because, as you say, there is no shortage of debate about supposed cancel culture, people who can't say what they want. Are individuals going to then sit down and watch that on television?
And obviously, we've got to wait to see how they do. But do you think it is realistic that they might get into the 6 figures that you talked about earlier? And if they don't, what happens to Andrew Neil and the others? What are the stakes for them?
This is quite a big roll of the dice for some of the people who've gone off to join this project. Andrew Neil has described it as his last big roll of the dice. And the show and the whole programme is kind of on his shoulders. He's the one who actually has name recognition that could bring in a big guest and an audience to see it. And in order to hit, say, 100,000 viewers across the day, his show is going to have to get several 100,000 viewers in the peak evening slot. It remains to be seen whether he can carve that out. I mean, television viewing is down across the board. They've got a hidden away slot on the TV guide. They've really got to get the word out and get people enthused and not just checking out on the first day, not just checking out on the second day, but checking out into week 4, week 5, week 6. Are people going to spend this summer tuning in every night to watch Andrew Neil's latest interview? Or are they going to be sitting there going, thank God COVID's over, there's the Euros and the Olympics on, I'm going to just go out in the garden and watch that.
Jim Waterson, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Jim Waterson, The Guardian's media editor. Do check him out at theguardian.com. He's writing about this and you'll be able to read that over the weekend ahead of the Sunday launch. GB News goes on air at 8 p.m. and it's up against the football and Antiques Roadshow. So what could go wrong? I'm only joking. I'll certainly be giving it a go. That is it for today. This episode was produced by Ned Carter-Miles and Alex Atack. Sound design was by Sammy Elanani. The executive producers are Archie Bland and Phil Maynard. I hope you have a fabulous weekend. We'll be back on Monday.